It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here it is, Titanic Tuesday on the horn. It is the 23rd day of July, 2019. And headon.live is where you'll find us over on the interweb tube. There's a few things you can do over there at headon.live, among other things. You can click on the chat room link, pick out a screen name and a password, and jump in and immediately be greeted by the denizens thereof. I'm doing that even as we speak. When you do, Anatole will be waiting for you to say howdy, so will Squeaky, and others who will wander along sooner or later at some point. And you'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, is not folding space today. No, it's just not smart folding into 99 degrees Fahrenheit in the man cave. No. So we'll all just be happily there together. Also at headon.live, you will find the Contribute tab. We talk about this at the beginning of every program, and every program I hope to not talk about it for very much longer in terms of, just getting things generally done. But we have people to thank today. Thank you to our subscribers for the 23rd day of the month. That would be the folks at Mellow Moonlit Meadow, and thank you to Stacy. And thank you to Philip in Maryland. Also, thanks going out earlier this afternoon to Andrea. Thank you, Andrea, very, very kindly for helping to take down the remaining fundraising goal for this month of July. It was standing at $320. Now it is down to $295. If we can raise $295 today, no more fundraising for the rest of July. Just radio as though it was corporately funded with lots and lots of, only not none of the corporate control that comes with it. Okie doke. So thank you, Andrea, and thank you to our subscribers. $295 is where it stands, and it's a little bit exciting because we need to raise the $295 so that I can pay the great big giant internet bill that's got a drop-dead date of tomorrow on it. And if we raise the $295, we'll have radio on Thursday. If we don't, we probably won't, because we'll get cut off. And that's just how that works. Rather merciless and unforgiving bunch ever since we lost our decent Democratic Attorney General. Yep. Because now, I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, the Public Service Commission says they have no jurisdiction over internet provisions, and the Attorney General's office just isn't much interested. And the Attorney General's office in West Virginia isn't much interested in anything except protecting the pharmaceutical companies that have burned up this state with opioids. That's how that works. But anyway, we need to raise $295. $29.5 people at $10 or $10 at $29.50. Either way, it shouldn't be a big deal, but it usually is. So we'll go through the program and hope that folks will get us started early And then we'll find out if we're going to have any we'll find out if we're going to have any radio come Thursday by the probably end of the program. So fingers crossed. You know where to begin? Every now and then I'm just reminded that we whisper these things into the ears of the universe, and sometimes it has to they have to travel all the way to the center of the universe, and then they come bouncing back. I happened to get up and take in some of my filthy morning habit today. It's about all the TV I really watch. There's not a lot on. And turned on the filthy morning habit, watched Joe scream that deficits do matter, and that all those years of piling up all that debt, and one of these days you're just not going to get your Social Security check anymore. And somewhere along the way, he made the statement, we will become like Argentina. Well, no, not really. Argentina is a much smaller country than the United States of America. And the world doesn't depend on the stability of the... No, not going to be Argentina. But nonetheless, he was out there trying to scare the Social Security people and the Medicare people. And maybe he succeeded. I don't know. But I'm never again going to let a Republican lecture me about the goddamn deficit. I don't know about you, but I'm not going to. Not now. Not after all of this. Oh, no. Ye golly Moses. We're on the way to a $30, $40 trillion deficit? And it really wasn't that long ago that we had it down to zero. Remember the lockbox during the 2000 presidential campaign, if you are old enough? Because I do. And Al Gore said we were going to take the savings and put it in a Social Security lockbox. And George Bush said, it's your money. We're going to give it all away. And he did. Everybody got a $300 loan check in the mail, but his buddies got a permanent tax cut. And then lo and behold, because the old dog doesn't know any new tricks, we get Nitwit Nero, and they did it again, only bigger, dumber, meaner, and more money. Mm-hmm. But the part about whispering into the ear of the universe and the universe whispering back, that didn't happen until Stephanie Ruhle took over. And I knew we were going to have a humdinger of a panel when I saw that noted climate change denier and campus rape questioner, Pulitzer Prize-winning writer for the opinion page of the New York Times, Brett Stevens, was on the panel. Didn't pay much attention to him. Never do. He's a moron. But what was telling was that, for some reason or another, the panel began discussing Donald Trump in terms of being the captain of the Titanic. Really? And there were multiple Titanic references made. And there was even a reference about iceberg dead ahead, sir. Full speed ahead. I don't think they used the phrase flank speed, but still. Pretty damn close. So, you know, hi. Enjoy the program. Long as we can, we'll keep on feeding you ideas. A little acknowledgement would be nice once in a while, but, you know, can't have everything. But it's Titanic Tuesday, when we celebrate manifestations of Titanic intellect. And it was on display in rich form today as Nitwit Nero went to visit the annual meeting of TPUSA, which apparently does not stand for Toilet Paper USA, as if a bunch of young white wing maggot hooligans would throw toilet paper rolls around all of America. No, I think it stands for Turning Point or something, and they call themselves conservatives when actually they're just a bunch of little goose-stepping maggots in waiting. Yeah. And it was a Lulu. Oh, it was. Ah, well, okay. This is the first cowbell of the evening goes to Clarity, who says, the difference between Argentina and the U.S. is they have a lot of pompous grass, and we have a lot of pompous ass. See why the cowbell? I thought you'd agree. Yep. Huh. That's actually damn good, Clarity. I'd put that one on the mantelpiece if I were you. Pompous grass and pompous ass. Oh, I do love good wordplay. Kyle apparently was in the same sort of mood as I was this afternoon, writing, I don't think Republicans understand math or basic economics. I don't think they understand not to use their toenail clippings to pick their toes, but that's me, or to pick their teeth. My father was trying to argue that people are going to lose their retirement and get taxed more to pay for a living wage. Yeah, you know, funny, as noted, funny how tripling his salary, tripling the CEO's of McDonald's salary didn't even cause the dollar menu to become the dollar and 10 cent menu. But by God, if everybody at McDonald's makes $15 an hour, oh, well now, that'll put the price of that cheeseburger through the roof. Greedy, greedy poors. And by the way, just a reminder, $15 an hour is not a living wage. I checked at one point in time, and I think the as it worked out, the minimum wage for a worker in, say, 1960 was something around $21-22 an hour. Just, yeah. Everybody wants to produce the program. Brother Deacon Asa says, really, Bob? You're not going to come out of the gate with the fact that the United fucking Kingdom is now run by a cat named Boris? Or the fact that darling, dear, precious Ivanka sent her congratulations to Boris Johnson of the United Kingston? Because she did. Because apparently she doesn't think any better than her nasty old tertiary syphilitic pappy. Congratulations to Boris Johnson on becoming Prime Minister of the United Kingston. Well, kofefe. Kofefe for you. Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody could get her a hamburger. But we got, so, you know, there's that going on. Yeah, what's that? Steve in New York says, Clarity's email, I'd like to award a gay cowbell. It's pink. Not sure how pink sounds. Wing it. Kind of languid that way. Yeah, sort of. Yeah. By the way, Steve points out, Mickey D's pays $15 an hour in New York City, and burgers there are no more expensive than anywhere else other than the fact that it's New York City. By the way, Jack in Shreveport adds, Boris Johnson, fuck. I can't help but have Boris the Spider song go through my head every time I hear that name. Boris the Spider. Yeah, you gotta, the Who, for anybody who doesn't, right, the Who. I'm sorry, Jack, if it's any comfort to you. Now I've got Boris the Spider running through my... God damn it. Boris the Spider. Oh, Jesus, is it in the... Hang on. Yeah, there it is. Maybe we can... It'll screw up the YouTube file, but that's okay.
Look, he's crawling up my wall. Black and hairy, very small. Now he's up above my head, hanging by a little thread.
Oh, is this mine? Oh, is this mine?
Change it to blonde and hairy, and you've got Boris Johnson to a T. Ew. Just ew. Mm-hmm. Titanic Tuesday is the day that we take note of, if not celebrate, manifestations of tremendous right-wing flank speed, all dead ahead into the iceberg sort of intellectual processes. We won't call it thinking. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Jack, very kindly. We are now down to $245 to go and inching ever closer to making sure that we have a program on Thursday and days thereafter. By the way, a program note, since we are inching toward the end of July, there will be at least a night of no programming once August starts. It's that time of year. I have family, the last remaining family that I have on my mom and dad's side, coming up to visit. And so probably the 5th and 6th of August, at least the 5th, possibly the 5th and 6th, will be no program evenings as I take a couple of days to spend with, like I said, the last remaining members of the little family I grew up in. So that's just maybe make a note of it. Boris the Spider. What have you done, Jack? I had a whole program laid out, and now, what's the next story? Boris the Spider. Jim with a note. Boris! There it goes. Looks like Captain Kangaroo. And it's going to be, might be a rougher evening than I anticipated. But I got a lot of stuff saved up. And then I got the stuff that, the usual Trump stupidity. And sometimes it just feels so gosh darned unavoidable. But I mentioned that Julius Geezer spoke to Toilet Paper the USA today. And does anything not yield monumental amounts of stupidity these days when he speaks? Because this is a prime example. We talk about constitutional issues, separation of powers, Article 1, Article 2, Article 3. Sometimes we even talk about Article 5. So today he's talking to Toilet Paper USA, and he's giving them a civics lesson. Yeah. And it results in this. Come on, we can do this. Oh, what, are we going to freeze up? Is that it? Try this again.
Then I have an Article 2 where I have the right to do whatever I want as president, but I don't even talk about that.
Okay, you got that? The, I know the audio is a little on the low side, so let's just make sure.
Then I have an Article 2 where I have the right to do whatever I want as president, but I don't even talk about that.
I have an Article 2. Is that what he calls when he goes to the little tyrant's room? But I don't even talk about that. An Article 2. There's only you never use the indefinite article in front of Article 2 because there's only one of them. It would be the Article 2 or the second article. There's no an about it. But he believes that, because we do not use the word think with this man, he believes that he has the right to do, that Article 2 of the Constitution gives him the right to do anything he wants to. Somebody has told him about the Unitarian Executive or something. I don't know. But they haven't told him everything he needs to know about Article 2. Because there's something in particular in Article 2 that, well, it, he might find kind of interesting. Let me see if I can find it. Just a second here. There it is, Section 4. Nobody told him about Section 4. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Yeah. Article 2, Section 4. But I have an Article 2 with a side, with a hamburger and a side of covfefe. And it went on and on and on. Let's see. Then there's the sick kidnapping fantasies.
And human trafficking, which is a phenomena that you would think is thousands of years old, and that would have been their prime. No, the prime is now because of the internet. Women, mostly women, are being trafficked, and they go not only in this country, all over the world. It's never been like this before.
You know what I saw the other day? It was a web archive cache of Trump International Escort Services with a long list of how to hire a Trump International escort. Curiously, all the women were shown wearing bikinis and or lingerie, and they were described in great detail. For instance, one woman was described as 32C, paren, natural, close paren, and it was described how the money had to clear before the date took place, and they could travel the, you know, be your escort on your world, you know, globe hopping whatevers. Yeah.
Human trafficking. They snatch women and they traffic women and they sell women, and we can't get the Democrats to even give us a modicum of the money we need at the border.
No, I'm sorry. There's no women auctions taking place at the border.
no matter how thoroughly and fervidly he fantasizes about that. Eventually, he got around to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and we got this.
And, you know, when I have one of the others, I guess this is Cortez, you know, I said, I'm not going for him, sir. Her name is Alexandra. And the guy couldn't figure out her second name. It was so funny. I'm being interviewed by one of them. Her name is Alexandra. Wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute, sir. Okay. He never got it out. He never...
Yeah.
I said, that's okay. I told him, just call her Cortez, because I don't have time to call her by the whole name. It's too long.
And the little baby maggots are just out there laughing and a-chortling and a-giggling. Well, that's okay. I haven't had time to pronounce his actual name in quite a while either. Nitwit Nero seems to work real well. But you never, sooner or later, you have to play your greatest hits.
She actually said a word that was worse. She said deplorables, and what was the second word? Go ahead. Irredeemables. That's right. She said irredeemable. She said...
Yeah, there he went, basking again. Then there was the raging paranoia about... Now, bear in mind, this is the setup. This is a little taste of the future. This is what'll happen if he gets his ass handed to him in November of 2020.
All of this stuff, and then those illegals get out and vote, because they vote anyway. Don't kid yourself. Those numbers in California and numerous other states, they're rigged. You got people voting that shouldn't be voting. They vote many times, not just twice, not just three times. They vote, it's like a circle. They come back, they put a new hat on. They come back, they put a new shirt on. And in many cases, they don't even do that.
I've solved the problem. I fooled them with the strawberries. God damn. So this is what got in the way of my show prep today. These moments of untrammeled madness. And, you know, I guess you're going to... It's only going to get worse. I mean, I'm just being... trying to be candid here. You don't get well from tertiary syphilis. You don't get well from senile dementia. You don't get well. He's not going to get normal-er. Or he's not going to approach anything that we would recognize as normal, even those of us who realize that normal is nothing more than a setting on a dryer. It's not going to happen. But while that was going on, the director of the FBI was having a little talk with the Senate of the United States of America. And I'm sure that that Nitwit Nero is now quite certain that he has been betrayed by Christopher Wray as well.
Well, in terms of number of arrests, we have through the third quarter of this fiscal year, had about, give or take, 100 arrests in the international terrorism side, which includes the homegrown violent extremism.
This year.
But we've also had just about the same number, again, don't quote me to the exact digit, on the domestic terrorism side. And I will say that a majority of the domestic terrorism cases that we've investigated are motivated by some version of what you might call white supremacist violence, but it includes other things.
Manny hurried through that last part. What you might call white supremacist violence. In other words, we have domestic terrorism in the United States. And according to Nitwit Nero's hand-picked director of the FBI, the majority of the domestic terrorism cases that they have investigated at the FBI are, and he really tried to couch this as weasel is, and more on weasel answers in a moment. He tried to weasel through this. They're motivated by some version of what you might call white supremacist violence. Well, okay. So, let's talk a little bit about that. Who are the politicians that are out there who are supported by white supremacists? Kamala Harris? Bernie Sanders? Jay Inslee? Elizabeth Warren? Kirsten Gillibrand? Joe Biden? I think that would be no. White supremacists are firmly in the camp of that son of a Klansman himself, Nitwit Nero. Shh. Don't tell Donnie. Oh, and while he was willing to go and speak to Toilet Paper the USA, every fall the trees are covered in toilet paper. Every spring the toilets explode. That wasn't that Dean Wormer and talking about Faber College? He went and talked to Toilet Paper USA, and we've had a smattering of what he said there. He turned down an appearance, however, because not only Toilet Paper the USA have their meeting about this time of year, but another, and far older, and certainly more politically and culturally relevant group does as well. That group would be the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP. And being decent folk, they didn't just invite Democratic candidates for the presidential nomination to come and speak to their annual convention. They did the right thing, and they invited Nitwit Nero to come and speak, too. But they wanted to have a panel where people would ask him questions instead of letting him stand up and do his Mussolini shtick and just behave like the orangutan he is. He declined. I mean, I think he said early on,
well, okay, I'll do a panel discussion if Diamond and Silk can ask all the questions. Would that be okay? I like them. They're the two, and Kanye. Well, okay, that's the three. And Steve Harvey, that I like.
You know, this business about whether there's no inquiry as to whether this man is a racist. He is one. I mean, you go all the way back. You can just imagine all the number of times that he heard various and sundry racist epithets used and come flowing out of the sewer of the mouth of his father. And so by the time that he's a young guy running some apartments of his dad's in, I guess, Queens, he would mark, and the federal government proved this, and the federal government charged him with this. He had a stack of applications for apartments that he would mark with the letter C for colored. And those applications for housing did not get approved. Nope. But yeah, just to go back to Christopher Wray for a moment. We probably cannot overemphasize the fact that even Julius Geezer's handpicked FBI director was forced to haltingly admit in open sworn testimony before the Senate today that the majority of domestic terrorism that takes place in the United States is driven by the supporters of Donald Trump. You really can't overemphasize that. So I guess that's the Trump part of the program, because I got other stuff that we've really got to get to. Darlene in Connecticut says, Trump is looking and sounding more fucked up crazy every day. Did you see his eyes when he was bragging about wiping Afghanistan off the face of the earth? He doesn't look normal. He's on something. Oh, he's been on something, Darlene. Dude's a speed freak. Bigly. There's no reason not to believe the guy who said he saw him on The Apprentice crushing up Adderall and snorting it for all he was worth. But I don't think it's the on something part. I think it's the fact that things aren't working the way they're supposed to. Down there from his little dictator all the way up to the synapses firing in his brain. It's not working well. And so he has to have prompts, and they probably do have to dose him to the gills. We may never know. But because he's doing what the Republicans and various other forms of white supremacists want done, they will prop him up, and if they have to, they will run electric current through him to keep him up and appearing to be sentient and, you know, vaguely operating in the same world as the rest of us. I agree. Kyle. Whenever Orange Asshole says, I don't talk about that, or some similar shit like that, it means he's saying the quiet part out loud again. Because he, unlike other Republicans, doesn't know when to shut up and at least try to hide the intentions of doing serious and possibly lethal harm to our country. Jim says, say what? An Article 2? Unitarian executive? Look out, folks. Truly fantasy. To them, it's reality. The empire has been brought low and the captains and kings departed. Full fathom 5. Oh, nice reference, Jim. Dave from the Blind, on the other hand, says, Mrs. Putin, shut the fuck up. You can't even complete a sentence in English. You might try brushing up on your German, although as screechy as Adolf got back in Germany, he could at least complete sentences. My advice, Mrs. Putin, resign the presidency so that you can complete several sentences, too. Please consult the Southern District of New York if you have any questions. Your buddy Dave from the Blind. And so, like I said, other stuff to go into, because Titanic Tuesday. What? Wait a minute, says Ron in Raleigh. Didn't former Labor Secretary Acosta cut the budget for the department that investigates human trafficking? I'm asking for a friend. I think it's been cut not just at labor, but who knows how many cases the FBI would be dealing with if they actually focused on it. This is after they quit focusing on it. This is the stuff they just found by accident. But as to the NAACP, Nitwit Nero said,
"Unfortunately, they want to do it in the form of a question and answer. I very much wanted to go, but I can't because of that."
Joe Biden's going. Bernie Sanders is going. Elizabeth Warren's going. Kamala Harris is going. And Pete Buttigieg is going, as the article says, along with others. Former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld, who is mounting a long-shot, hapless Republican presidential primary campaign, is going. He blew off the NAACP in 2016, too. I guess it comes around every 4 years. Of course, today the NAACP in convention gathered, voted in support of the impeachment. You know, the Article II impeachment of Donald Trump. NAACP President Derek Johnson said, "Trump's misconduct is unmistakable and has proven time and time again that he is unfit to serve this country." Now, with that word, fitness to serve, a Titanic moment. Brought to you by Representative Tulsi Gabbard. She showed up on some program I've never heard of before. And on that program, she declared the following. "I think one of the things I'm most concerned with is Kamala Harris is not qualified to serve as Commander-in-Chief. And I can say this from a personal perspective as a soldier. She's got no background or experience in foreign policy, and she lacks the temperament that is necessary for Commander-in-Chief. I've seen the cost of war firsthand. I've experienced the consequences of what happens when we have presidents, as we have from both political parties in the White House, who lack experience, who lack that foreign policy understanding, who therefore fall under the influence of the foreign policy establishment, the military-industrial complex. This is what's so dangerous. This is what we've seen occurring over time." Tulsi Gabbard fancies herself a foreign policy expert. Fancies. Because there's a big difference between fancying oneself one and, well, you know, being one. You know what the requirements for President of the United States are? There's nothing in there about having served in the military as a requirement of being no. You got to be a citizen of the United States. You have to be a natural-born citizen of the United States. And you have to be at least 35 years old. That's it. There's no requirement that you ever walked around with a bunch of jewelry on your shoulder boards and got saluted by people and marched up and down the square. And frankly, the aim of the framers of the Constitution was to explicitly set up civilian control of the military. Because when you let the military control the military, you don't have a very stable government for very long. But Tulsi went over and swanned around with Bashar al-Assad. And she even took a meeting with Nitwit Nero at one point in time, thinking that there might be a tasty cabinet position for her somewhere. Maybe like Secretary of War, we don't have that, Secretary of Defense or Secretary of State or something. Jesus. Kamala Harris is not qualified to be president because she is not qualified to be commander-in-chief. Sit down. She's got ties to the weirdo Hindu nationalist movement in India. Bear in mind, she is Hindu in the religious sense, insofar as her father got involved with the Hare Krishnas, and one of those one of those dudes. But she's not of South Asian extraction, to the best of my knowledge. Kamala Harris is of South Asian extraction. She's actually got a better claim to some Hindu heritage than Tulsi Gabbard will if she goes on and lives 1,000 years. This is not an endorsement of Kamala Harris. She's not my number one candidate. Not by a long shot. But Jesus Christ. I guess Tulsi's just desperate for some attention and hungry to try to raise some do some fundraising. That's all I can figure. Because making an a-constitutional remark like that makes it abundantly clear in a sure enough hurry that you're not qualified to be president of the United States. If you're making up... And look, remember, in the Constitution, there is a clause in front of that commander-in-chief language. Okay? Yes, I'm typing. Once again, we're back to Article 2 of the Constitution of the United States. In point of fact, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1. If we go down to Section 2, the president, it's not in front of, it's a dependent clause within the sentence. The president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States, there not being any Air Force at the time, and of the militia of the several states, when called into actual service of the United States. If the Army and the Navy and the militias aren't running around doing war things, for instance, I mean, if he's doing something at the State Department, he's not Commander in Chief. It's a time fluid thing. He is Commander in Chief with respect to the oath sworn people in the military, the various military branches of the United States. If you're a civilian, if you don't have to salute anybody, if you're one of the bosses of the country, which is what you're supposed to be when you're a civilian, he's not your commander-in-chief. Even if you hop up and down and squeal and hoot like a barn owl, he's not the commander-in-chief of you or of me. Or of anybody that isn't walking around wearing matching clothing with strange insignia on sewn on it or pinned on it. He is only the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. But thanks to the poor performance of the multimillionaire for-profit media over the last couple of decades. You've got a bunch of people who think that the president of the United States, that a secondary reference to him is commander in chief. It is not. Interesting, that Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1, Paragraph 1, rather, also contains, it's another place in the Constitution where they included the word impeachment. The president shall be the commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States, comma, and of the militia of the several states, comma, when called into the actual service of the United States. See, that's a reference to the militia. He may require the opinion, we get a semicolon there, he may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices, and he shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. So he can't pardon someone, he can't pardon a subordinate who has been impeached. There's some relevance there insofar as there's still a shred of a conversation taking place to the effect that, oh, Steve Mnuchin, and more particularly Bill Barr to prosecution, should be impeached. I think the case is pretty well, it's made itself, but yeah, it's a very busy Congress, I guess. But were one of those to be impeached, he couldn't say, I'm going to pardon you. Because right there it is. He can't do that. He does not have pardon power in matters of impeachment. You may not have noticed it, but a couple of guilty verdicts came out today in regard to felony charges against one of Mike Flynn's cronies, Turkish fella. And Flynn stopped cooperating, and the Barr Justice Department didn't do much about that. But, yeah, busted. And Flynn didn't testify. Now, Flynn would be pardonable. And being as how he kept his mouth shut, maybe he will be. Maybe somehow or another that's the message that's been communicated. But it's worth remembering that Flynn served alongside Mike Pencil Neck Geek in running the pre-inaugural committee, you know, the transition team. Let's say it turned out that there was something filthy going on there, and Mike Pencilneck Geek was to get impeached. Yeah, Trump couldn't pardon him either. Meanwhile, note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Excuse me? Hashtag not you, Tulsi. Tulsi can fuck the hell right off. By the way, you did see that Kirsten Gillibrand said that she would still bum-rush Al Franken. That's two people that are struck from the list. Well, there was another story out there today. Made me think of Kirsten Gillibrand. Police in, I think, yeah, Tennessee responded to a call. A parent, I think in this case a daddy, had just left his freedom protector laying around, and his little boy got it. And I just kind of blew past it because I all of a sudden went, oh. And I can't recall if the little boy was shot in the arm or if he shot a sibling in the arm. The most important part of the story was that the kid wasn't killed. Or that uh, um, As the doctors put it, the injuries were not life-threatening. But the parent had left a loaded firearm just laying about, you know, round in the chamber, ready to go, because you never know when the ISIS MS-13 is going to come barreling through your door there in Busted Knuckle, Tennessee. And the kid's going to have a story to remember for the rest of his life. And yeah, as noted yesterday, I remember back when Kirsten Gillibrand was representing a hillbilly district, the New York 2nd, I believe it was, that was deeply white wing and even tended toward republicanism. Deeply conservative is the way the news reports described it. And that was back when she was happy to be cashing those NRA checks. And she would brag to anybody who would listen that she was going to exercise her Second Amendment right to defend her home. And so she had two loaded rifles, one under each side of the bed, I guess, one for her and one for hubby. And a bunch of at least a couple of little children toddling around the house. Curious little children who find it no problem whatsoever to look under mommy and daddy's bed. And no, there's not a line to be drawn between dots in these stories. The guy whose kid got shot in Tennessee probably couldn't spell Kirsten Gillibrand or Tina Rutnick. Which is what she used to go by, if his life depended on it. Mm-mm. But statistical data points add up. And there are far too many of those data points to take anyone seriously who has ever said, "Well, you know, I keep a loaded gun under the bed in case there's a home invasion here in upstate New York." Yeah, who is going to home invade her in upstate New York? People who had watched their loved ones die miserably of cancer while she was actively involved in defending tobacco executives who actually sat in front of a congressional committee and said, "Well, shucks, no, we don't know about no connection between cancer and tobacco. Smoke them if you got them, y'all." Yeah, maybe. I don't know. No. Flavio says, "You're absolutely right, Bob. She's Samoan and German. No Southeast Asian at all. Gabbard was born April 12, 1981, in Leoloa, Maupitasi County on American Samoa's main island of Tutula. Her father is of Samoan and European ancestry and an active lector in the Catholic Church. Her mother, who was born in Decatur, Indiana, is of German descent and a practicing Hindu. Gabbard chose Hinduism as her religion while she was a teenager." And in there somewhere is a connection between Daddy and some Hare Krishna bunch. Then, of course, there's the things that she said, you know, shitting on the LGBTQ community. No. Just no. Albert in Rhode Island with a note. "Bob, a few weeks ago, Dope45 tweeted that ICE was going to arrest millions of illegals in raids in major cities. After the raids, Trump told the press, 'The raids were a great success.' NPR reported today that ICE arrested 35 people. I said they'd lost the element of surprise. They didn't blame Dope45 for causing the raids to fail. They blamed CNN and Fox for doing it." Oh, you can't make this shit up, can you? No. But to the extent that there was a sad story about it out of Tennessee, there's a good one, too. It made me downright proud. It made me feel downright patriotic. ICE agents had been stalking a neighborhood in the metro Nashville area for a couple of weeks. Nobody really knew why, but then it became apparent one morning. The ICE agents had been cruising around in a white pickup truck. Nobody knew that they were ICE. It wasn't marked until the morning when they turned on their blue and red lights and tried to take down a man and his young son. People in the neighborhood said they saw the white F-150 truck roaming the neighborhood over the past 2 weeks, but didn't think much of it until this morning, like I said, when the lights came on. They'd been sitting in their truck since midnight Sunday, stalking the man and his young son. They tried to pull over the van, and the van pulled into a driveway in the neighborhood. And the ICE thugs were saying, y'all have to exit eventually. Exit the vehicle. And they went on to offer them, they were lying, of course, cash rewards. But they'd had some good counsel, the father and son had, and they stayed in the van over 4 hours. This is the part where the heartwarming part. That's when neighbors came out. They poured gasoline from their lawnmower gas cans into the van's gas tank so that they could keep the van running and keep the air conditioner on and not die of heat stroke. They brought water to the van so the father and his son could hydrate in that brutal heat. And then, about 10 members of the neighborhood formed a human shield, a wall that the ICE thugs couldn't get through, and they walked the man and his son and welcomed them into one of the homes. And then the ICE thugs gave up and went the fuck away. There were no wants out for the man or his boy. All they had was some piece of information that they were here illegally. Yeah, never mind the fact that from a genetic standpoint, they probably have a greater right to be anywhere in this hemisphere than either of those two ICE pissants. ICE spokescreep in Nashville, Brian Cox, said they drove away to de-escalate the situation. Metro Nashville PD showed up too. And they did nothing to assist the ICE thugs. Among other things, ICE called Metro Nashville PD at 7:19 a.m. and they requested assistance, but they didn't say what kind of assistance that they needed. Metro Nashville PD, who showed up, were told, do not get involved unless it is absolutely necessary. A woman, Ms. Farley, went outside at 8:26 a.m. She went out to smoke a cigarette. And then she started calling her neighbors. They brought sandwiches. They brought cold rags. And the next thing you know, the activists start showing up. The fascist thugs can't win when we make it clear that we will not participate in fascism. The Metro Nashville Police Department officer said, "We're not here to enforce any federal script. We're just here in case anything major happens." You know, like the ICE thugs decided to do violence to one of the American citizens who were trying to protect someone they deemed to be as fully human as they. Sounding like something straight out of Idiocracy, Brian Cox, the spokescreep for ICE, said, "When our officers leave for the day, they're going to a particular places looking for particular individuals." Yeah. Spokescreep Cox went on to say, "ICE believes that everyone is safer when federal, state, and local agencies collaborate." It was through the good work of the Goddess of Irony that a guy who works for a fascist organization used the word collaborate. I highlight this story because we spend an awful lot of time beating the hell out of the Deep South. But this is a case of doing the right thing. I don't know what motivated those neighbors. Maybe they knew the man and his son because they worked in the neighborhood. Maybe they push lawnmowers. Or maybe they've roofed houses. Maybe they've just been decent human beings in the neighborhood. Maybe it's 10 people who are good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christians. And maybe they were acting within the scope of the actual teachings. Like I said, I don't know. Maybe one or two of them had that whole, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," running through their heads. But whatever motivation, they got it right. And somebody is doing something right there in the state capital of Tennessee. Good for them. God knows I'm a hell of a lot more proud of them than I am of the little twits and twerps who showed up to Toilet Paper USA today. I'm guessing that's not 10 Trump voters in Metro Nashville. Steve in New York says, "The man and the boy in Nashville, something occurs to me. Just think of the time they spent there and the time and cost to get a man and his son. If that ain't fucked up priorities, I don't know what is." And here's the thing. We have no idea whether the man and his son were here improperly or not. But we do know that an American citizen from Dallas has been incarcerated without bail, without hearing, without recourse. Is it a week and a half or a month and a half? And that the only reason they took him in was because of the color of his skin. Last I checked, there was nothing to say. Has he been released? I'm sure you've seen the story. I reiterate, an American citizen. You know, like melanoma is an American citizen. Or an American citizen like those anchor babies, Beavis and Butthead, and darling Ivanka, who's proud that Boris Johnson will be the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Flavio writes, subject line, Nashville, Tennessee, people in the human chain. Quote, they came to the wrong community. Flavio says, I was so glad to post that story to my Facebook. More stories like that, please. That, again, is how you resist fascism. And I don't just throw that word around. It applies. That is who these people are. You don't go to work for ICE. You don't go to work for Customs and Border Patrol if you have some noble high ideal of service to the community of humankind. No, no, the hell you don't. The kid in Dallas has been released. Thanks, Steve, serving as the ad hoc research department of the Horn community this evening. Waiting for that to load. And again, that's not, you know, if it's happened once, it's happened before. In a Papers, Please country, is bound to have been more than a one-off. According to his lawyer, the young man was detained for 3 weeks. Francisco Irwin Galicia. He was released this afternoon, only after the story went national. Not that there should be a distinction, but not a naturalized U.S. citizen, but a native-born, proud son of Dallas, Texas. He was detained at a Customs and Border Patrol checkpoint in Falfurrias on June the 27th. He and his friends were traveling, he along with his 17-year-old brother. They were traveling up to Ranger College in North Texas for a soccer scouting event. And that's when they ran across the CBP checkpoint. Jesus. His brother, meanwhile, was born in Mexico and didn't have papers that were in order. So the family is split now, and he's living with his grandmother in Reynosa, Mexico. After the first 2 days in detention, Marlon signed a voluntary deportation form that he was coerced into signing. Jesus. So Marlon may never see his brother Francisco again. Because shitting on brown people is more important to this misanthropic regime than respecting the people who love this country and want to be here. Francisco Galicia, by the way, his papers, even though he was born in the United States, but not in order either, because he didn't present them with a fucking passport. He did give them his Texas ID, however. For 3 long weeks, he was not even given access to a telephone for even one single phone call. Finally, Saturday, they transferred him to ICE custody, and he was able to make a collect call to his mother. That's who and what this country is in the grip of a gang of merciless fascists. God forgive us. Indeed. And then there are some others. I saw this story. And by the way, we are down to $245 to go, so that we can have a program on Thursday. Not just fundraising free, but any program at all. This is the part where we sweat the downhill run to pay the great big terrifying internet bill. So if you want to help out and jump in alongside Andrea and Jack in Shreveport, it would be great. Stephen, New York, reminds us, the goddess of irony truly is ever vigilant. The native-born young man, Francisco Galicia, was born, wait for it, at Parkland Hospital in Dallas. Steve also points out that you cannot get a Texas ID without a Social Security card, Social Security number. The CBP thugs knew he was a citizen, but they decided to put the screws to him because of his brown skin and the fact that they knew in June 2019 that they could get away with it. It's real. Of course, you know, when Christopher Wray was talking about domestic terrorism, he did not include any of the sundry violations of civil rights and violations of conventions of common human dignity that take place every day among Customs and Border Patrol and the ICE thugs. Note coming in from Lady B. Subject line, thank you. Why the fuck do people own so many guns in rural or less populated parts of America? You don't need an AK-47 or an AR-15 to hunt, and you and your parents moved away from the cities to feel safe, yet you're still the most paranoid motherfuckers on the planet. Well, let's hold up for a minute. In the rural, less populated parts of America, some of us have been here for a very long time. I've lived in other places, but when it came time to marry and settle down, we settled where my family's been for generation upon generation upon generation. That, of course, is simply me, but that's also a lot of people in rural America. I'm not a gun goober, but you don't shoot at a rabid skunk with a 30-06, or for that matter, a 12-gauge shotgun. Yeah, we want something with some range on it that you know you can take the thing out and not make it explode all over the place when the round hits. Or a potentially rabid coyote. Let's use a coyote instead of a skunk. You don't turkey hunt with an elephant gun. And you don't deer hunt with a gun you'd use for pheasant and quail. Now, none of those things are AK-47s or AR-15s. Pistols are another matter entirely. But just as you don't dig a hole with a hammer, and unless you're in dire circumstances, you don't drive a screw with a shovel. Different tools, different purposes. Lady B says, we get it. You don't like diverse neighborhoods. Crime does tend to be a bit heavier, but again, you don't live there. Why so many weapons? And we got plenty of crime here, especially with the onset of the opioid crisis and meth. And look, hillbillies, desperate hillbillies, in an economically trashed region, will do just about anything to forget the misery of where and how they exist. That's another way of saying we like to get fucked up. And we do, to varying degrees. It would be nice if a place like West Virginia had legal cannabis. But then again, it would be nice if cannabis was legal all over the United States. More on that, perhaps, in a little bit. I myself, and again, I'm probably not the best example, but I can only speak from my own experience. I lived in a diverse neighborhood when I moved away from Alabama. I've talked about the fact that my parents were not going to join the other white people in running away just because a couple of black families moved in. That's not the kind of people they were. My dad had labored alongside African-American men in the mines, and, well, everybody that walked out of that drift mouth at the end of the day was black as the ace of spades, covered in coal filth. And so there wasn't just a hell of a lot of distinction in the dark. But it's true, I guess, it's hard to be a farmer in downtown Cleveland. There's a phenomenon that broke out that is happening in France. I read about people who live, and if you can imagine the joy, at least the way I perceive it, simpleton that I am, the joy of living in Paris. Goddamn, really? But middle-class families are finding it more and more difficult to live in Paris. And so they're moving out, not just into the burbs, but into the countryside. And in turn, in what represents a manifestation of the 21st century idea of the enclosure, huge swaths of cities the world over are no longer permanently inhabited by anyone. They're inhabited by people renting Airbnbs. Properties that once upon a time would have been a rental unit of an apartment in a city are no longer any such because there's a hell of a lot more money to be made out of renting them on a strictly itinerant basis as, again, an Airbnb. I've done the Airbnb thing once, and I felt right creepy about it, something creepy about being in somebody's house that you don't know. But it's a, it, and so then what happens is when the French families move out and take their little kids with them, this particular story being focused on France, the things that serve families also tend to dry up in the town, or in the city. And then the families move out into the country, and I think these are kind of the folks that, Lady B was talking about. They get out into the city, out of the city, into the country, and they start complaining about the roosters. I shit you not. There is, the rooster is actually one of the animal symbols of France itself. And there is a case winding its way through the courts in France about whether farmers' roosters can fucking crow out in the French fucking countryside because the middle-class city-dwelling Parisians don't like crowing roosters at sunup. Well, you know, I'm sorry, Philippe, but that's when roosters goddamn crow. But even the city-dwelling French are so divorced from reality, I guess that they forget that chickens come from eggs. And that roosters have a role to play in that. And so a French court is actually going to pass on whether a particular rooster is going to get the goddamn death penalty for doing what a rooster does. Because it's pissed off some urbanite Parisian. And it happens in this country too. Well-off, little upper middle class or lower upper class, whatever, people go out into the country and they find out that it smells like shit sometimes. Because there are things out in the country that don't shit in toilets, like cattle and pigs and chickens and llamas and emus. It's the brilliant 60s satire, late 60s, early 70s, that was Green Acres brought to life. There's an old story about a tourist who was staying at a little inn out in the country and was out taking the air one morning when he saw a wagon coming along. The farmer in his overalls and his broad-brimmed straw hat and the wagon being pulled by a mule. And the tourist says, "Say there, Mr. Farmer, what do you have in your wagon?" And the farmer, realizing he was dealing with a dude, said, "Well, it's manure. You know, cow shit." And the tenderfoot from the city says, "Well, whatever are you going to do with that?" He says, "Gonna put them on my strawberries." And the city dweller says, "Oh, you should come to where we're staying. We get sweet cream to put on ours." Or the city kid who got a chance to go to summer camp out in the country. And his first day there, he was crafting a letter, and he said, "I can't stay, I gotta come home. I can't, I'm getting eaten alive by the mosquitoes." But then it was time to go out to, I don't know, leather working class or whatever, and he'd stop there, and by nightfall, he's back in his tent, and he's working on his letter again, because they always want you to write home, you know, "Dearest mother, dearest father, here I am." Right. And all of a sudden, in his tent, a little firefly goes, blink. And the kid leans down over his paper and says, "No, really, I gotta come home. The mosquitoes are killing me, and now they're coming after me with flashlights." And the funniest, if there's anything funny to be said about this, or one of the most interesting, let's not use funny, let's use interesting. As Sparky says, I know the cow shit smell well, Bob. Oh, I know you do. I know you do, Sparky. You live next to him. And when the wind's just right, oh, there's just not a hell of a lot you can do about it. You know, Jefferson had this vision of a noble and engaged, Dr. Bill and I were talking about this earlier today, as a matter of fact, a noble and engaged agrarian farmer freeholder class. I guess he was thinking about white folks. Who would be, you know, perpetually involved in the politics of both his locality, his state, his county, his state, his nation, her nation. And that didn't work out. I mentioned the other night, if you want a great example or a great understanding, Joe Bajant's Rainbow Pie deals with the enclosure, with the driving of rural people off of their farms where they'd successfully lived and worked and for, you know, 200 years and into the cities. I think about the great John Prine lyric, Hello in There. But eventually, you know, American capitalism needed people to leave places that they had been happily living for 200 years. They needed the hillbillies to leave the hills and hollers and come up and support the permanent consumer industrialization that was then taking place in places like Toledo and Akron, Flint and Detroit, Cleveland. The Hillbilly Highway ran in both the two directions, both north and south. The Hillbilly Exodus also included moving to North Carolina, and in one or two particular instances, moving to Alabama. And although it was Alabama, I can say with certainty that I would not be doing this, I would not be this person, I might not even be alive. Had my father, for a variety of reasons, not decided to pull up stakes and get the hell out of here. So there's that. But anyway, Lady B says, we get it. You don't like diverse neighborhoods. Crime does tend to be a bit heavier. But you don't live there. Why so many weapons? I guess the bears and deer and squirrels have teamed up, stole your AR-15 and C4 plastic explosives and are going to run y'all out of the neighborhood. Careful. Those meth gators have got new weaves and are sucking the dicks of Muslim jackrabbits to get their nails done. Jesus Christ, Lady B. Yeah, you get a real, real long jingle for the Muslim jackrabbits to get... The rabbits need to pay for their shoddest habits. They need to steal Tide to sell for money. Guard your laundry rooms and lock the house up tight. Radicalization starts in the simplest ways. One of them is the fear of strangers. And some of y'all think minorities are paranoid. Oh! No, hillbillies have got the book writ on paranoid. Because the story of the broad form deed comes down through a few generations to us. You can even find an actual broad form deed. If you go around looking around out on the internet, you could see a slickered up fella from the city would show up on a mountaineer's farm, and he'd be carrying more money than the mountaineer had ever seen in one place at one time. Sometimes maybe as much as $1, $2, $3, $4, $500. and he'd bring a bottle of good store-bought liquor. And they'd sit around the table, and they'd drink that liquor, and the city feller would explain that, well, all he's doing was selling the minerals under his ground, the right to get at them. The old mountaineer could live right there in his cabin like he done and his daddy done and his grandpappy before then. And they just wanted to get the coal and the timber was all. And with a belly full of that good store-bought hooch, well, sooner or later the pen would come out and the old mountaineer would mark the bottom of that broad-form deed with an X. And his wife would make her ex. And the next thing you know, they were fucked. Their land was ruined, wouldn't grow anything. The rains washed all the soil away. And the streams that used to teem with trout, well, it didn't teem with nothing because it ran black with coal filth now. And it was all because they were neighborly to a stranger who come up from the city with a bottle of good store-bought liquor. As Will in the chat room points out, dictators and would-be dictators need external and internal enemies, real or imagined, to justify their policies. That's so true. And in the case of Appalachia, the dictators weren't even government. Government just sort of greased the tracks. The dictators were the money men from Pittsburgh and New York and London, Amsterdam, places that no mountaineer would ever dream of ever even seeing. So there is a, you know, there is a little bit of that. A little bit of that distrust. Flavio says, don't you worry, Bob. The fascist repugnance will get rid of birthright, jus solis, citizenship, and that you were born here won't mean a goddamn thing. That's their desire. And from there, well, goodbye to the rest. Goodbye to the 14th Amendment, except to the extent that it is useful for corporations, and goodbye to the 13th, too. True story, says Steve in New York, city kid. My grandpa, when he was in the Army, had some city dweller make fun of him for living on a farm. My grandpa responded, where do you think you get your food? The sophisticate responded, the grocery store. And I confess, I go into cities, and it's not because I'm some sort of doomsday prepper, and we don't have a basement full of bucket pudding, but the way American distribution works now, we've had folks tell us about it, people who work over the road, that just-in-time delivery model. It's how come you don't see as much shit on your shelves in the grocery store anymore as you used to. It's why if there's a couple of things that I'm particularly fond of, I have to figure out when the truck comes in so that I can actually get some. Because it all gets bought up otherwise. Everything in this country is in a far more fragile state than what we dare even imagine. I go back to, there's that wonderful clip from Men in Black. See if I can find it real quick. it works real well in this context. That might do it. I think this is it.
Put up a bionet all the way around Manhattan. If it's not human, I don't want it to leave this island.
Yes, sir.
What do we hear from our friends upstairs?
Same thing, deliver the galaxy.
The bug's got the galaxy, but we got his ship. He's got to be looking for a way out.
Warning, photonic fusion detection. Warning, photonic fusion detection.
What the hell are they shooting at us for?
Dark alien battle rules, kid. First we get an ultimatum, then a warning shot, and then we have a galactic standard week to respond.
A galactic standard week? How the hell long is that?
1 hour.
1 hour. Then what? Oh, that's bullshit.
Look, kid, to keep the bugs from getting it, the Arkillians will destroy that galaxy.
And whatever planet it's on.
You're talking about us.
Sucks, son.
I'm pulling up the location of every interstellar vehicle within 100 miles.
Already did. Frank the Pot took the last ship.
Okay, we got Smoothie's landing in Throg's land.
Gone.
We live in Lennox.
Adios. Gone.
All right, Bayonne.
Gone.
All right, there's 3 Mile Island.
Gone.
Yeah.
Staten Island.
Gone, thank God.
Yeah, okay, that's the wrong one. It's the scene where they're sitting on a park bench in New York, and he says something like, there's always an Arkelian battle cruiser hovering over the planet ready to destroy us. And that's the point here. Rural or urban, and by the way, I don't use urban as a euphemism for anything except herbs, urbis, Latin, city. Twenty-first century culture is toe dancing on the sharp end of a pin in ballet shoes that have worn very, very thin. This is a result of 150 plus years of the Industrial Revolution and what we have done in the course of it to the planet. I presume I was not seeing fake news when I saw footage last night of massive flooding in Brooklyn. I didn't find it difficult to believe because it had been raining for nearly 48 continuous hours here in the hills and hollers. But that kind of rain means something more when you're right next to the damned ocean and not much of anywhere for the rain to go in a heating up planet that is going to experience more and more of these weather extremes. So no, I don't have a safe full of 30-06s and 300 mags and 12 gauges and side by side double barreled 10 gauges and a 410 for home defense and a 223 for varmints. I don't have any of that. But I do all you have to do is pay attention to Puerto Rico, to New Orleans, to Houston, to South Florida. Hell, Virginia Beach, Virginia, didn't not too long back, flooded all the fuck. And just because the multimillionaire for-profit media stops parachuting journalists into it, doesn't mean that the problem didn't take a toll. I was reviewing my timeline for another reason over on Facebook, and it was May when I posted the thing saying, okay, we're bugging out to the basement. We got a tornado warning here. We don't get tornado warnings. Yeah, we do now. Yeah, we do. But the whole thing can fall apart in an instant. By the way, the big power outage in New York of a week or so ago? Yeah, that was one area of New York being blacked out so that another area of New York would keep power. Guess which area got blacked out? That's right. Where the poor, mostly not white people lived. As so that the area where the white folks did live would be able to keep their air conditioning going. Caught that earlier today, too. It's just like, you know, the big cities of the United States generate inexpressible amounts of trash. Well, they don't get to put it on barges and take it out to sea and just dump it in the middle of the ocean anymore. So instead, they dump it on the South. Now, this isn't me trying to stir up divisions or divides. It's just a goddamn fact. Every fucking day, trash, garbage, waste, solid waste-ish, arrives via trains, trucks, what have you, to little county landfills in the rural South. It comes from Philadelphia. It comes from Newark, from New York, from Boston, from Chicago, from Cleveland, from Cincinnati, and it gets buried down here. We were getting fracking waste from Pennsylvania for a while. I think we probably still are. And they pay a pittance to the landfill operator in a given county, and the Solid Waste Authority is tickled pink to have the money. Because most of those states have fucked up state governments anyway. And here's the fun part. Constitutionally, no state can say, this is for real. No state can say, we're only going to take care of our garbage. Now, for instance, let's say I've got more than, I think the rule is 7 bags with our trash collection service. Let's say that we're doing some late spring cleaning and I've got 42 bags of garbage that need to go out. Well, I can't just set 42 bags of garbage out at the curb and have my local trash collection service pick it up. I have to take it to the local landfill. Well, my county doesn't have a landfill. I have to drive it all the way to Beckley, West Virginia, and the Raleigh County landfill. And what a party that is, by the way. And there I pay a tonnage rate to dump it in the landfill. Well, West Virginia, and the Supreme Court case was actually about West Virginia. West Virginia can't say, we're going to save West Virginia for only dumping West Virginia's garbage. Because we have to accept the garbage from New York, from New Jersey, from Pennsylvania, from Ohio, from Massachusetts. We have to accept it as a matter of constitutional law. The Constitution says that those states have an absolute right to dump their trash on us. I doubt if any of the maggots even know about that. They certainly aren't sitting there thinking about it. And we talk a lot about how rural southern states get more than their, you know, more than what they pay in taxes back, while the same is not true for the northern states. But there's, you know, there's more at work than meets the eye. So, you know, if you live in one of those big cities, you ever wonder where your garbage goes? It goes a long way. It's a really long trip. By the way, going back to the mail. Oh, you're awful. Going back to Lady B's reference to the muslin rabbits, Steve in New York says, wait for it. They follow Sharia law. A man who would pun would pick a purse. But I got to admit quality when I see it, and that was quality. Ron and Raleigh says, you have to understand, the thing in New York about shutting down power in more colorful neighborhoods to allow more monochromatic neighborhoods to maintain power has nothing to do with racism. You can't blame everything on racism because it makes white people uncomfortable. Curiously, you can't blame everything. It's not that you can't blame everything on racism because it's not racist. It's that it, yeah, as Ron notes, it makes folks a little squirmy. So, oh my God, it's been a 2-hour filibuster, and I still haven't even gotten to some of the stuff I was damn certain I wanted to get to. I mentioned the idea of the fact that the South is particularly prone to having horrible government. There's no good government in Texas. There's no good government in most of Mississippi or Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas, Missouri. Well, there are consequences to that bad government. And some of those consequences are borne out in a new study put out by the National Bureau of Economic Research. It's new. And what the National Bureau of Economic Research wanted to find out was, what did the Medicaid expansion contained within the Affordable Care Act do in terms of health care in this country? Well, we have to remember that the Medicaid expansion began as a national thing. And the federal government was never going to pay less than 90% of the Medicaid expansion costs for each and every state in the union. But in a Supreme Court case years ago now, National Federation of Independent Businesses versus Sebelius, that's what we now know as the Obamacare case of 2012. Well, John Roberts, because he is an evil genius, as a Republican goes, realized that he could stick the shiv in the Democrats by saying, okay, the Affordable Care Act isn't going to come in as a matter of regulation of interstate commerce. We're not going to hold it constitutional based on that. We're going to hold it constitutional based on the constitutional power of those godforsaken liberal, pinko, commie, panty-waist socialist Democrats to impose a tax on the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered people of Merca. And it worked. So, along the way, they also took a look at the Medicaid expansion and said, oh, no, 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 this will never do. The federal government cannot strong-arm the individual states by forcing them to accept free money. You can't just make people accept millions and millions and tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars. By God, that's un-American. No, if there are panty-waist, sissy, commie, pinko socialist states that want to take free money from the jackbooted thugs of the federal government putting their jackboots down on their freedom-loving neck right next to the tattoo that says, only God can judge me, well, they're going to have to say so. And so at the stroke of a pen, tens of millions of American citizens were deprived by nothing more than the complete accident of where they happen to be working and poor at the same time of being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. Well, enlightened states said, you know, having the working poor have access to Medicaid that we're never going to have to pay for more than 10% of is not a terrible idea. And so your Californias, your Oregons, your Washingtons, your New Yorks, your Massachusetts, well, Massachusetts already had Romney Care, your Vermonts and so forth, your Minnesotas, I said, well, hell yeah. Working folks need to be able to go to the doctor if they're sick. That way they can go on being working folks, working for next to fucking nothing. But they ran the stars and bars up the flagpole down below the Mason-Dixie line, and in other states like Talibandiana and Ohio Stan and Idaho, Kansas. And they said, we're not going to have the hard-working people of our states being corrupted by being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. We're going to have us freedom down, yeah! And so if you happen to be working and poor in South Carolina or North Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky. Well, no, Kentucky came on board. So did West Virginia. But you were fucked. And you weren't going to get any Medicaid. I specifically wanted to bring up this story about this report coming out from the National Bureau of Economic Research, because it says so much about the long-term consequences of the decisions that are made in cool, air-conditioned offices there in the Supreme Court building by people who are never going to ever, ever, ever have to worry about being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. It's just a cool and rational decision based upon nothing but the law and the facts and the Constitution of the United States. Political ideology had nothing to do with it except everything, says John Roberts. Well, the states that took the Medicaid expansion saw 15 million more people enrolled in Medicaid and able not just to go to the doctor when they're sick, but to go to the doctor and work on not getting sick. Be educated. Be shown ways to modify their behavior. You know, cut the biscuits and gravy down to 4 breakfasts every week from 7. It's just a start. eat a piece of fruit once in a goddamn while. Quit smoking. Ease up on the hooch. Did you not learn anything from your grandpappy getting ripped off by the city slicker with the hooch? One of the more interesting and encouraging data points that teases out of this report is that the mortality rate for adults who are designated statistically as near elderly fell by more than 9% in the states with the Medicaid expansion. All sounds pretty good, doesn't it? It does, that is, until you remember all the millions of your fellow Americans who can't just up and move to civilization, who for a variety of reasons are going to stay in Mississippi, in Alabama, in Georgia, in South Carolina, in North Carolina, in Tennessee, in Missouri, in Kansas, in Idaho, in Wisconsin. In Talibandiana. It's an uglier story for them. Here's the bottom line. When he took out his constitutional decision signing pen, John Roberts, at the stroke thereof, murdered 16,000 people. 16,000 American citizens he condemned to grim and dusty death for nothing more than his stinking, rotten, conservative principles. I guess this is the portion in the story where I remind you that John Roberts is pro-life. You know, just like Kay Ivey down in Alabama is pro-life. That's what happened when John Roberts and the majority that he cobbled together said that it's unconstitutional for the government to make the states take free money. One person dying needlessly is a tragedy. 16,000 is a statistic. But I have I'm not saying I'm any good at it, but I have a literary heart. Not really a scientific one. I look at things with a poet's eye. Not an engineer's. And so when I saw that John Roberts had, with malice aforethought, killed 16,000 American citizens, I didn't, you know, we can't conceive of 16,000 of anything. It boggles the mind. So you have to instead step back and conceptualize 16,000 individual funerals. 16,000 people clutching their chest, one at a time. One at a time. You have to see her. She's standing at the sink in Alabama. And she doesn't go to the doctor. And the dishes have to get did. And somebody's got to do them. and the evening meal is over, and the left-hand sink is full of hot, sudsy water, and the spigot of the sink is turned to the right side of the sink, the right-hand sink, and it runs cool. And so she plunges her hands into that soapy water and begins to wash a plate. And she hadn't been feeling her best, but she gets up every day just the same because the young'uns have to be got off to school. And she's got a job. And her husband's got a couple of jobs. And the only way that family survives is if everybody keeps doing their jobs. And of course, being the South, she gets the added privilege of coming home and doing the housework too. But you know, he mows the grass. And she rinses that plate, and she sets it in the drainer. And all of a sudden, something inside her says, "Don't breathe." And for the life of her, she'd love to, but she can't. And in the next room, the TV's turned up real loud. There's a football game on. It's Saturday. Now let's make it Monday night. And so he doesn't necessarily hear the big thud when she collapses on the floor. And when he does wonder, because it's not usually in there that long, and he gets up and he walks in there, she's laying dead on the kitchen floor because of John Roberts' conservative balls and strikes constitutional motherfucking principles. Or it's the man who's been feeling tired lately, but he can't do anything. He can't do anything there in Georgia but get up and go to work every day, because that's all he's got, and everything falls apart without him. And one day he collapses. They take him to the hospital just long enough to find out he doesn't have health insurance and to run some blood work, and, well, son of a bitch, he's got leukemia. Oh, he's not going to get treated for that leukemia. Lying sacks of shit like Joe Scarborough, who say that anybody can walk into the emergency room and be treated. Well, not him. Not him. Not him. Because without the Medicaid expansion in places like Alabama and Mississippi, those people that I'm describing, they are deemed too wealthy for access to Medicaid in its original form. If you own a car, God knows, if you own a trailer, if you live in anything more complicated than a cardboard box, places like Alabama and Tennessee say you're too rich for Medicaid. And they will simply and happily, these conservative, family values Republicans let you die. ...16,000 times those scenes have played out since 2012. More than 16,000 times since 2012, when John Roberts signed away the lives of his fellow Americans. Tell me again about the nobility of the Supreme Court. Jesus Christ. And the most sickening part of this, no one will ever confront John Roberts with the consequences of his own godforsaken evil. And there's no hell for him to go to. There will be no consequences whatsoever. The only way to ever impose any kind of a consequence is to dare to dream, get the presidency in 2020, keep the House, get the Senate, and run through a bill that puts 13 members on the Supreme Court and let a Democratic president appoint all four of them, and all four of them shouldn't have been out of law school more than shouldn't be more than 3 months past the fucking bar. And let them make John Roberts spend the rest of his miserable, murderous life being told to sit down and shut the fuck up, John. You blue-eyed killer, you. Is there a sequel? Why, yes. Hell yes, there's a sequel. The sequel is on its way to Washington, is probably on its way to Washington, D.C., even as we speak. In fact, it is on its way to Washington, no matter what happens in the Fifth United States Circuit Court of Appeals. Because that vicious, lunatic, piece of shit case that was elevated out of some godforsaken shithole corner of Texas, made its way to New Orleans, where a couple of conservative members of the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals made it sound like they are by God ready to once and for fucking all have done with the Affordable Care Act. And so no matter who wins at the Fifth Circuit, the son of a gun is going to Washington. And instead of just 16,000 people, John Roberts will get the dream of his life, the chance to put his conservative values into play and murder millions. Oh, but we don't impeach Supreme Court justices for murdering people. Why, once again, that wouldn't be cricket. These are just policy differences over how one goes about interpreting the Constitution. That's all. Tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business. The multimillionaire for-profit media spends a lot of time trying to keep us as ginned up as possible about dangerous, violent people tens of thousands of miles away. But the really dangerous ones are sitting in a place that can be reached by airplane or automobile from anywhere in this country. The monsters who inhabit the white wing side of the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Like I said, I felt like it was really important to get to that story. As Mrs. Lohman says at the end of Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid. And it needs to be paid 16,000 times. They died without health insurance. They died without being able to go to the doctor. the ones who did make one last mad, desperate rush to the emergency room, well, adding insult to injury, they got to die and get a $10,000 or $20,000 bill that they could never pay on top of it. Misery piled upon agony, piled upon heartache. This is the essence of what it is to be a Republican. And just a gentle reminder, dear members of this little community, none of that happened when Donald Trump was within 200, 300 miles of the White House. That was all done in 2012. And it was standard operating procedure and the expressed policy of the Republican Party long before Donald Trump took ownership of it. We clear? How can you say that, says Ron in Raleigh. Texas Governor Abbott just signed into law the Chick-fil-A protection bill. You cannot do harm to Chick-fil-A in the state of Texas. I'm feeling freer already. Well, absolutely. Yeah, Ohio did it. Jared points out Ohio did eventually accept the Medicaid expansion. But not at first. Not at first. Arkansas accepted it as long as they got a waiver so they could shit on poor people. Virginia finally got around to it. So did Maine. So did Louisiana. But in every one of those states, the Republicans are still pissed. And they're still yearning for the day that they can go back to when they were free. Of course they're too wealthy, Bob, says Arthur. You saw them. They were drinking grape drink instead of unfiltered puddle water. Malingerers. And speaking of Arthur, thank you, Arthur, for jumping in on the fundraising this evening. In our mad dash to keep the program on the air and have fundraising free radio in the process, we are now $235 away from our goal. Thank you. Wow. 2 hour and 18 minute filibobster. I should be ashamed of myself. Let's go talk to Will in Chicago instead. Hey, Will.
Hi, greeting from the pleasant shores of Lake Michigan, where we've been having good weather after a heat wave and where we really didn't have as much of a downpour as you or New York did. As I posted in the chat room, welcome to Earth 2.0, brought to you by greed, chutzpah, and incredible stupidity.
Facilitated by hydrocarbons.
Exactly. Well, I like to say, sadly, we do not have any known habitable planets. And one thing that I will remind people of is the AIC Act is being sponsored, and there has been some progress with it. Mind you, it might not go anywhere with Mitch McConnell, who, how would I say it, if he was revealed as a reptile who needs to live on a much warmer planet, I would say I would feel sorry for any reptile anywhere in the universe by them being forced to have Mitch McConnell as one of their numbers.
Hear, hear.
But calling for a few things. One, to remind people, yes, the horn needs your support. I realize there's a lot of good causes to support, but the horn is a relatively cheap cause, and it is a good, great source of information. Because, as some may know from following me on Facebook, I have applied locally to more teaching jobs, as well as out west, got an interview with a California district not that far from our good friend Lamar, with the silent R, on Friday. But if you listen to commercial radio, I can pick up a progressive talk in Chicago, and till I hit Los Angeles, if I'm going the route of pretty much I-80 and detouring through Denver, then through Vegas and to L.A., it's not till I get to L.A. that I can find what can be called a progressive talk station, the Pacifica station there.
Yeah, your only hope would be to have Sirius XM along the way. And, well, I'm not – there's a lot of Sirius XM progress that doesn't impress me.
Well, unfortunately, it's a matter of filling content. Initially, when I heard Air America Radio was coming out, I thought the logical way to do it would be, okay, you have so-and-so fill in this slot, and he's in Minneapolis, and so-and-so in New York, and then so-and-so in Florida, and the like. And this way you have a more diverse set of voices, and you don't have to try to crowd them into the single most expensive city in the country. This would have been logical. But as for our mandatory Star Trek reference from Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, as Spock said, no one ever claimed humanity to be a logical species. And unfortunately, we have things worse. I will be busy tomorrow, so I will miss part of the Mueller hearings. But I think at this point, we have little to no hope of reaching the Trumpers. It's the other part of the nation that is largely disengaged that might be useful in reaching. But unfortunately, it seems we are living age of rising totalitarians or would-be totalitarians. See Boris Johnson in Britain and see how Bush responds to Duterte and Putin, among others. But it is not hopeless, and that's one thing I've learned to have. You can actively choose to despair or actively choose to hope. And I choose to hope because I've met people who dealt with a lot of worse than I have. For example, sometime back on the Horn Facebook page, and do remember, support the Horn Facebook page, support the Horn, support your local progressive host and causes you believe in. Alden Salavi is a Israeli poet and peace activist I met. When he showed up at my synagogue, I noticed he was perhaps moving a bit stiffly, and I found out from my rabbi that he was recovering from being hit in the ribs by the ultra-Orthodox who protested the Women of the Wall. He literally put himself in between the Women of the Wall, who just want to worship on the in front of the last remnant of the Second Temple on the new moon, and ultra-Orthodox men who believe, no, women cannot lead prayer services or anything. Never mind Miriam and Deborah both being called prophetesses in Scripture. So here's the thing. If he and others can put up with being beat, and I can even tell worse stories of people such as Eric Asher, who founded the Rabbis of Human Rights, who had bones broken by soldiers of his own country, as well as having rocks thrown at him by various people, Israeli, Palestinians, and the like, if they can hold on to working on a cause, the people who are supporting justice in our cities and Appalachia can continue tirelessly year after year, we should not despair. Despair is not an option, because quite literally there are people banking on your despair and my despair, and hope we'll just sit in front of a screen, any screen, and be entertained. Well, I don't have kids. I'm not ruling out. But guess what? I have nieces and nephews. I would like to give them a better planet than the one I inherited. So we must not fall into despair. It's going to take all of us. And I realize there's a lot of infighting on those who want positive change in this country. I can understand some of it. But at times, we are our own worst enemies. Don't believe me? Ask Al Franken, who I think has a good basis for a lawsuit, if laws allow it. So let's have faith in each other and that we can make a difference. Because in the end, what other choice do we have but to move forward?
Climb or die. You know, when you get to a certain point on the rock face and you're not using ropes or anything like that, you either climb or you die.
Yep, and unfortunately, this is the situation we have. I mean, I've seen some pretty bad cabinet officials in my time, but good heavens, the lot we have now makes almost makes James Watt, when I was young, seem reasonable, because at least he had his weird, whacked-out explanation for not enforcing environmental laws. Whereas today's choices are pretty much all based on greed, with just a veneer of saying they believe in something. So we have to hold on, not give up. And it's going to be hard. It's a marathon. And this is something I think the GOP grasped better than the Democrats. Namely, they have farm teams. They start with someone in the local school board, local city council, and elevate that person through state and local, other local offices.
Right, and they have litmus tests, and the nuttier you sound, the further you go.
Exactly.
I think about Joni Ernst in Iowa. Remember, she's the one who proudly ran the ad about wearing
the pig castrator,
about castrating hogs while she was walking to school 10 miles uphill both ways wearing Wonder Bread bags on her feet. She apparently went down to the southern border, Will, and came back and declared that down at the southern border, it's just like Thanksgiving dinner. I kid
really?
You not. Yeah, it's just like...
I would
like,
suggest we force her in the same conditions to eat the same food and see how much it feels like a Thanksgiving dinner without a bathing or a toothbrush for a week.
Well, the way she'd be willing
to sell out her own mom.
Well, the way she described it, she said, it's just like putting together Thanksgiving dinner. You know, you make enough for your family and a few more people, and then 1,000 people show up. Well, what do you do?
You order more food and you act in a manner that would not be confused with some of the worst examples of detaining people in our past century. Remember, we are at the point where, sadly, the greatest generation is passing. And it's often said that once a generation passes, a lot of its wisdom is
gone with it,
lost. And trust me, I've known people who, when I was growing up, who fought in World War II, whose reaction to a president who said, "Good people, there are good people on both sides," to where neo-Nazis showed up, is, "Oh, if I was only 25 again."
I see. That reminds me. I have seen pictures of what's going on in Puerto Rico.
Yes.
People in the streets blocking highways.
Yes.
And it even expanded to a flash mob in Grand Central Station in New York today.
Well, unfortunately, it's necessary because Puerto Rico is still being rebuilt, and I would not even use benign neglect as a term. I would call it malign neglect because the more people who leave, well, the more business opportunities. But there's a problem with Error Trump's plan. These are American citizens. So what happens if they move to Florida, Chicago, Northwest Indiana, Atlanta, or other places? Suddenly, they can vote for president.
Exactly. So, but the thing is, the question was asked, why aren't the American citizens doing this with Trump? And the short answer is because, unlike Puerto Rico, this country has not en masse been through what they've been through. In the United States, the cable is still on, and so is the electricity.
I hate to say it, for the vast majority of people, unless their ox is gored, they do not care whose ox is gored, as long as it's not them. However, if you had something like an electrical grid collapse over the Northeast in the sort of weather we had recently, and it's a major blackout for a few days, trust me, people would be furious, particularly if the president was all busy golfing, which, how would I say, I think he's now up to the 500 million mark on golf.
Yeah, something like that.
And
lies about every hole.
Well, come on. If he's not lying, he's usually unconscious.
That's about the size of it. But, you know, when you lie about golf, you're not lying to anybody but yourself. Because it's a game that's played. It's a game that's played between the ears.
Considering the quality of what's in there, based on the professors from the schools he attended,
not so much.
No, I mean, I hate to say it. We are in a position where, honestly, it is dire. It is not hopeless. But, I mean, I ask myself, what will happen? And all I can do is do my own part, which is, again, what all each of us can do, whether it's supporting the horn or electioneering. I don't think I told you about the joy of canvassing and having a storm turn my umbrella inside out and wreck it. But I was willing to do that in November. I'll be willing to do it next November in 2020. Why? Stakes are high. And we have to think about the future of our communities, our country, and the world.
Let me ask you this. I don't want to put you on the spot, and if you choose not to answer, that's cool. I myself have said that I have not selected any particular Democratic nominee, and that I will, or Democratic candidate, and I will vote for whomever the nominee is. And some of those will involve a little. Well, no, I'm not even going to say that. I'll vote for whoever the nominee is. I have some I like better than others. I've got a list of people I wish would just sit the hell down. But do you have a preference at this point in time?
No, as I'm still absorbing their policies, evaluating their records, and judging them. But let me slightly alter a quote from Babylon 5 regarding the Centauri Emperor. Even a cat could be the emperor these days. Even a cat I would support over this president, because I would presume chances are the owner of said cat at least is a rational enough have the cat step aside and have the good VP take over. I mean, all these, no candidate is perfect. But considering we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And let's face it, we literally have communities that are suffering right now, which if another 4 years of this regime from 2021 to 2025, I'm not sure how we recover, because I won't be surprised if we have a huge recession with all the economic ineptness of Trump. Richard Wolff, the economist, said there is concern that Boris Johnson's attempts for a hard Brexit may really wreck the economy in Britain and Europe, which, of course, could impact us and bring down the house.
Maybe I'm naive on this in this regard, Will. I don't think it'll wreck Europe, and I think it will have next to no impact on the United States, but it will wreck Britain, plain and simple.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. I mean, I'm not an economist, and while I respect his opinion, I'm not qualified to judge. But here's the thing. What is needed is something people have pushed for, another referendum, since most of the public who didn't vote now realize this is not going to go well. Hopefully that'll come about. But, I mean, what do you do with the 3 million people in the European who are European Union citizens who are now residing in Britain and not necessarily
what do you do with the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland?
That may be a problem that makes the Gordian knot seem simple. I mean, there are no logical, easy solutions. And honestly, I feel very sorry for my Scottish relatives, whom I'm actually in touch with a few, because they have to deal with this mess. No wonder many of the Scots supported independence, because as bad as Theresa May is, now they have to deal with Boris Johnson, who has been fired twice for lying.
And, you know, I didn't realize that Boris Johnson was a born United States citizen.
Nor did I, but he does.
But he had to surrender his American passport because of tax evasion.
Oh, yes, yes. Here's the thing. One thing I've noticed about many of these right-wing regimes and totalitarians of all stripes is they never play by the rules. They all seem to have one common skill. They are exceptionally good at feathering their own nests.
And Boris, along the way, may befoul his as well. Because they want to hang on to power, but how's he going to hang on to power presiding over the wholesale collapse of the British economy when having the only thing left being a deep reservoir of xenophobic bigotry and hate?
I don't know. It's going to be a very rough situation, and I'm not sure how the Brits are going to get out of it. They have my sympathy, but this is going to be a very complex issue. And yet, we can tell how bad it is when Stephen Colbert, in interviewing John Oliver, said, "Let's talk about Boris Johnson. He looks like a failed clone of Donald Trump." And John Oliver said, "I appreciate that because you have simultaneously managed to insult both men. Essentially, you have someone who is so similar to Trump in many ways that he has I mean, he could arguably pass for a cousin in terms of ideology. The question is what resistance he'll receive from Labor and other parties. And he did, and he, a third of his conservatives didn't even support him in the election. So he's a race starting off with a very weak base. I expect the EU already rejected his saying, well, I need an extension. No. I think the EU might be willing to accept.
Are you willing to make odds on how long before he starts selling MUGA hats? MUKGA?
You're sure they're not already being produced?
Well, no, I'm not. I think about that elderly Brexiter couple that I met in Philadelphia. They were on holiday, and they were riding on a bus from one city to the next, and just getting completely worn out, being driven up and down the East Coast of the United States. And they got to, you know, basically they got to see several different mid-level hotels in big cities in the U.S., one of which was the one that I was staying in Philly. And they, it's just stunning when you hear it, especially when it's spoken in some sort of lovely British accent, and they say something like, well, we certainly hope that that Boris Johnson gets in, because otherwise it would be 5 years, terrible accent this evening, 5 years of unrestrained Marxism. Now, what's gonna happen when Boris Johnson collapses?
It is not Marxism to provide a national health service and basic safety net.
Oh, no, they want their NHS and they want their pensions. But what happens when he collapses the economy and they can't have it anymore? How's that going to be Jeremy Corbyn's fault?
It won't be. Sometimes I fear the only thing that causes us to move forward is a crisis came back to what you mentioned about Puerto Rico. And it's unfortunately, I think there are so many people who cling to the status quo because it works well for them and forget there's a lot of others for whom it's not working.
And also, Will, and again, remember that the ground is already being plowed and made ready with any number of claims that, you know, the NHS must be modified or that, you know, it's outlived its financial viability or its usefulness, what have you. And we need to, we need to work on the American model when the American model is just, you know, death and misery.
Guess what? A fear when looking at the Israeli healthcare system in a report, one person honestly said their fears was our becoming more like the American model, which it says something. But I would expect there to be a great deal of pushback on trying to do anything with the NHS.
But remember, you know, the UK is still full of, and this is an appropriate use of the term, neoliberal austerity monsters.
Yes.
Neoliberal in that sense does not mean what it means to the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity patrol. Neoliberal in that sense means anybody who does anything that I don't agree with 100%. But in this instance, neoliberal means the people who want to strip and liquidate the commons and distribute the wealth upward. If the British economy does fall apart, there are people who are already standing in line waiting to reap the benefits of it. It's just like the economic collapse that happened under George W. Bush. Everything went to shit. The banks got bailed out. And all the ordinary people who lost their homes, well, they got screwed. But it was snapped up. Those homes were snapped up by the money. And those homes are Airbnbs now. And you couldn't buy one of them for love nor money because the money people are not going to turn loose of them because they're far more valuable as at the least rentals, and at the most Airbnbs.
Yep, I fear Britain's in for hard times, and I fear when the current economic heyday we're supposed to be having turns out to be an illusion, it's going to really hit us hard. I mean, sooner or later, the economy chugging along, even though it's not chugging along for all has to end. And my only hope is that it ends on Trump's watch, so the GOP is discredited.
Well, as I've said before, we have to be careful that we recall that not all of this is Trump. That a lot of this is
Trump is the spearhead.
Trump is the symptom. The Republican Party is the disease.
Exactly. Yes, and unfortunately, if you get rid of him, if he were to say, "Hi, I'm going back to television," well, guess what? You still have Mitch McConnell. You still have Cornyn. You still have Rand Paul, and so many others who, let's face it, would probably wish that we could edit out any genes for human compassion.
Is that a little harsh?
No. That's not a little harsh. Hey, just on a lighter note, Vic, you mentioned Israel a couple of times. I got to tell you the story I ran across. And it comes out of the ultra-Orthodox community somewhere near Tel Aviv.
Oy vey, the people who do not believe my rabbi is a rabbi despite having been ordained. And I think he's technically also a Cohen.
And, yeah, the people, yeah, the same people who didn't believe that the Tree of Life synagogue was a real synagogue.
Yes.
Well, they have issued, I don't know what it is in Hebrew, but in Arabic it's a fatwa. The head man there in that community has issued a fatwa against dogs.
Yes, I came across the story and passed on as I had other things to do. And my reaction is, excuse me.
It is a sin to own a dog. This rabbi said, it is a sin to own a dog. It is an offense to God to own a dog. Dogs have no place in their community, and dogs are certainly not any sort of thing that is beloved of the Creator.
Well, they seem to forget that dogs, although in the era of the divided monarchy, weren't really that domesticated, have been. And also, I would not criticize the existence of any creature, because if you believe in a creator, dogs are part of creation.
But where does that kind of loopy talk come from?
It's called believing that it's a peril that happens in religion, but it can also happen in politics or other fields. Namely, you think that your opinions and the Almighty's are one and the same, and you try to be ultra pure. We've seen it in
politics. But there are those rules that you know, no eating shrimp, no wearing cotton polyester blend dress shirts, stoning disobedient
children. Well, actually,
children.
That's an interpretation. The ban is on the sort of wool linen mix that was used by the priests. But the thing is, they build fences around various rules to the point where they kind of fenced in.
But is there anything in the Torah or the Talmud that says, you know, dogs are bad?
No. I mean, they were most were kind of wild animals in ancient days. But I mean, good heavens, if they're going to do that, there's a lot of rabbis whom they would respect who are have been and are dog owners. So the problem with the ultra-Orthodox is they believe that they alone have the answer, and this is a problem with fanaticism in anything. If you think you are the sole possessor of the truth, everyone else is either wrong or sinful. You can see fanaticism in so many ways. I mean, you can no more convince the ultra-Orthodox of any faith than the political extremes of any group, i.e. Ron Paul, that their opinions are wrong.
Because I read that story, and I immediately, in my own mind, it cut to the ending of where the red fern grows, and I could see that rabbi rooting for the panther.
Well, unfortunately, there's fanatics and silly people in all.
Speaking of fanatics, any thought? You know, I know you've noticed that that the nitwit Nero has been conflating love of Israel with love of the United States almost constantly every time he mentions the squad. And I've been wondering what was behind that, and I guess somebody's been feeding him some information, because I guess BB's going to get his ass indicted in a right smart form here in short order. Did you catch that?
Yes, and also you have to remember, his target is not Jewish Americans, really. It's really the evangelicals who want to see a greater Israel and an end times war, so their Messiah will save them and screw anyone else who doesn't believe. As a religious liberal reform Jew, I have a simple saying, sir, I do not wish to die for what I consider an insane theology. And even if I had no religious beliefs whatsoever, I would say trying to set up a war for a belief system that and not liberating people from something horrible like slavery or what have you is ridiculous. But Trump, needs the evangelical base because it's one of the few things he has left.
That's very true, and they all sit around and dream of the great getting-up morning when Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, is going to come back and kick ass and take names.
Yes, and unfortunately, I think if he was walking amongst us, they would not recognize him. In fact, they would probably call him something hideous.
Go get the wood. We've been saving it for a reason. We're going to do it all over again. Well, absolutely. I was just going to ask you on the way out the door. So I don't know what the legal system is there. Is there any chance of BB getting convicted and removed from office? Will the ultra-Orthodox crazies just go out of what remains of their tiny little minds if that happens?
Well, they can, but here's the thing. They're not exactly that popular in Israeli society.
Then how do they keep winning?
Coalitions. The problem, I respect parliamentary systems, but there's so many parties in Israel that you have to cobble together coalitions from the various parties, even if they only have a handful of votes. And BB's chief skill as a politician seems to be cobbling coalitions together. And there's also been a reticence to take them on since there were some early compromises dating from the 40s. But part of the problem is when you have an entrenched problem, it's very hard to deal with. But there has been progress, and they have seen a few setbacks. But again, here's the thing. I think that as much as I grumble about a two-party system, wishing we had four, having about 20 parties always means a coalition government. So that's life.
Well, it's
democracy, it's perfect.
It's a warning to those who wish we had something other than what we have, which, you know, I say with full knowledge of the problems of what we have.
Yes, I mean, you can maybe match with four, maybe five parties, but once you keep on getting subdividing into more and more smaller parties, just trying to come up with a coalition is difficult. So you might have the leading party, one leading party like Labor, have more votes than Likud, but Likud was able to cobble coalitions together. Hence why Netanyahu is still in office.
Well, that actually makes a lot of sense, and you did a better job with it than I ever could have. Will, I wish you a very happy evening. It's a pleasure talking to you. We don't talk near enough.
I'll try to call more often. And, folks, let's try to fill the horns coffers so we can have a lot of time of no needed donations.
That would be lovely. Thank you, Will. Have a great evening.
Have a great evening.
All right, that's our buddy Will calling from somewhere in the greater Chicagoland area. And it is time to get out of here. Shame on me for not getting to the Green News Report this evening. I filibobstered right over it. My bad. Sorry, Brad. Sorry, Desi. So we do. We close the books on the 23rd of July, 2019, with $335, or no, $235. Sorry, ciphering. $235 to go to finish the week and the month. And we got to raise it, like, soon, because I got to pay the bill tomorrow so we can have a program at all on Thursday. Okay? So that's where it all stands. Let's see. Note coming in from Lady B. Thanks for your clarifications, he says. I understand there are needs for certain things us city folks may be completely ignorant of, but wow, a different gun for a wolf versus a deer? I don't remember my granddaddy having that many weapons. Well, it's just that you don't use a shotgun, a 12-gauge shotgun at 300 yards on a potentially rabid coyote. For that, you want the deer rifle. But you want a varmint gun for something smaller. Because you just don't want to have, you know, exploded pieces of groundhog or whatever laying all over the pasture. To be honest, Lady B says, my city has a population of about 500,000, the second largest in the state, but downright rural. Compared to other cities, I see deer, foxes, raccoons, and rabbits, and the occasional bear all the time. They're being driven out of their homes because people build their homes in their homes. Wild animals are a nuisance to newcomers. I wish the fuck folks wouldn't build where they do, but that shit's too lucrative. Besides, if you want to see a live animal, you can just go to the zoo, right? I hasten to add that I have never met a Muslim jackrabbit, though. Yeah, but you make me wish. Yeah, as a matter of fact, we have a really big doe, and she has taken up residence. We've let the back half of the property kind of go to seed. Sometimes it's good to do that. We burn a little. We put a little less carbon into the atmosphere because we're not mowing that part. I'll weed eat it down once in a while, but there's apparently a family of deer. Are part of a herd of deer who are bedding down back there. I had to go out after the program last night. We were out of half and half of the morning coffee. And when I came back, she was standing in my backyard, literally like a deer in the headlights. And she just stood there. She wasn't running. She didn't look afraid. Her tail wasn't flicking like she was nervous. And we just kind of enjoyed a little moment looking at each other. And it reminded me of a Robert Frost poem that's worth looking up at your leisure. It's called Two Look at Two. And it's a lovely piece of poetry. And it's kind of nice having them in your backyard, you know, until they eat your garden. And then they're rats on cloven hooves. Really hungry rats. And unless you're willing to put up 8 feet of fence with electric, you're not going to keep them out. But I just filibobstered over top of Lady B, who says, my grandfather was a farmer, and so was my father until he joined the military in 1955. I spent 2 weeks every summer in Mississippi as a kid and teen.
We picked and shelled peas and green beans. I've seen hogs killed for meat, cows milked, and birds hunted. Not wholly ignorant of farm life and what it takes to live off the land. I guess I can't figure out why someone would want to continue to live such a hard life. Rural life has its pleasantries. But hunting for my own meat in 2019 when there's a Safeway around the corner is just confusing. Are you that poor? Is it still fun to field dress a deer? Do you use hunting knives you bought at Bass Pro Shops? I'm a notoriously terrible shot. I don't like to kill anything. And while I understand that hunting is big tourism business, it is statistically impossible that people can realistically, quote-unquote, live off the land in terms of hunting game. By the 1950s, there was hardly a deer left in the state of West Virginia because they had been hunted to extinction. So had the elk. So had the buffalo. Yeah, there were buffalo here. So had the bears. Just about anything that wasn't a songbird had been hunted damn near to extinction. They were reintroduced via a conservation department because it was deemed that they were a benefit and would be an economic benefit when people could begin to hunt them again. But while there are some people who fill their freezers every fall, they are few and far between. And it's not really possible. Now, if you've got a plot of ground and you've got the time and the money, you can garden. And as Roger, who is now up in Oregon, has made clear, you can put a lot of good stuff up to eat. But I don't think, realistically, that you can feed a family. It's not, you can supplement, but you cannot fully feed. When this house was at its heyday in the 50s, they bought a cow every year, and that was the beef they ate all year long. They raised a beef, they slaughtered it in the fall. They did the same with a hog. They kept chickens. My mother would turn my poor father's stomach talking about going out on Sunday morning before church, grabbing a chicken, cutting its head off, and doing all the things you have to do with a chicken to fry it for Sunday afternoon, Sunday dinner. Did all that, got cleaned up, went to church, came back, fried chicken. But it's not, it's not possible. And I've got, my family were storekeepers. I've got the ledgers from where they kept track of what they sold to the people in the community. There have always been storekeepers because there are some things you cannot produce on the farm. And you're right, Lady B, it is brutally hard work. But so too is living on a patch of ground that's not as big as my county that happens to have 11 million people piled on top of you. It's just a matter of mindset. I love going to the city, but anytime I'm in the city, by the time I've been there a little while, I'm ready to get back to this little patch of nothing in a little tormented state in Appalachia. Because it's fun just to be out in the yard and not have people on top of me. And, you know, not share walls with anybody. Even if the walls are thin and can't keep out the cold in winter. I don't go out and hunt the animals we eat. The only hunting I do is to go over to Kroger's and look for that yellow manager's special sticker. That's my idea of hunting and getting a price break on something I couldn't otherwise afford to have. And we got Cabela's here. I don't know where the nearest Bass Pro Shop is. And by the way, thank you for knocking out that fin there, Lady B. We are down to $230 to go. Thank you, Lady B. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thank you all so very, very much. Thank you to Jack and Andrea and Arthur and Lady B this evening. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever fashion you so do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thanks, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Check them out at CRMW.net. Keep up with what they're doing. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.